Support for PSG Talk is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped is taking over the world and is now available for all of your grooming needs. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code PSGTALK, all one word, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Make sure to use the promo code PSGTALK. And now, let's get into the show.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of the 1970. On today's show, we will talk about PSG's 4-1 victory at FC Barcelona in the Camp Nou and all the fun stuff that went along with that. And to join me, as always, is my co-host, the editor of PSG Talk, and I would assume a very happy man. His name is Ed.
Yes, hello everyone. The podcast you've all been waiting for. Huge win over Barcelona. Happy to be here. I'm under about 2 feet of snow, as most of the country is here in the United States, but it doesn't matter because PSG absolutely demolished Barcelona. You absolutely love to see it.
Absolutely. And nothing better to talk about when you're stuck in your home than one of a number of great victories PSG have had over the past year or so. This one with a bit of a revenge twinge to it, I should say. Although it's kind of hard to say that, you know, something 4 years after the fact is revenge. Kind of makes you seem a little petty. But do you feel, let me put it this way, do you feel that this, let's say large picture, is this victory vindicating in any way? Does it sort of, what does it have to do with that loss 4 years ago? Does it have anything to do with it? Do we feel like we've gotten some form of revenge?
Yeah, absolutely. I know I did. I know when the final whistle went off, I screamed like just a primordial scream. I was like so excited that we finally had gotten this monkey off our back, all the Barcelona fans chirping about that 6-1. And since that moment, it's been a story, right? Like that was the first chapter, that 6-1. And then you had the Neymar saga, and then you had them trying to get him back. And then finally we get to the climax of the story, the rematch. How will this one turn out? And 4-1, it's not even going to be like a long final chapter. PSG ended this tie in one game now.
Well, all right.
No, it's not going to happen again. It's not going to happen again. I should knock on wood. There's no way.
I wouldn't call this the final chapter. I would call this the second to last chapter of this particular story.
Sure.
Because I think even the players, you could tell after the match, you didn't see a lot of post-game videos from the locker room. They weren't, you know, hugging on the field. I think this team knows that.
There wasn't Rabiot with the 4-0, right, with his hands. Didn't he do that in the locker room?
Maybe. That sounds like something he'd do. But it didn't feel like a team that thought their mission was completed. I think they're 4 years smarter than they were back then. And I think this victory is symbolic of a few things. But I really do appreciate that this was more of a victory for the fans. I don't think they took this as some sort of big triumph, and they shouldn't take it as some sort of big triumph. They still have another 90 minutes, you know, to play here. So I think the first thing to point out is, again, we can feel vindicated as fans, this sort of 4 year cold war between, you know, PSG and Barcelona that's mostly happened through the media and through Twitter. And we can sort of take pride in this, but I do appreciate the sense that PSG and their players know that this isn't the end of anything, that there's still all the goals are left in front of them. And that's reassuring, I think. And we can sort of talk about what the mentality going into a second leg would be. But I will be the first to admit, I did not think that PSG were going to be able to do this. And it's not because I have some, you know, fear of Barcelona in 2021. I think if the last 4 years have proven anything, is that that 6-1 loss by PSG might have been the last sort of great Barcelona moment for a while. It feels
it's the greatest game in Barcelona history, according to their fans.
Well, it's also, again, it's also the last really memorable European match they've had. I mean, everything else, it's sort of been downhill from there. So this is not, you know, we're not getting revenge on the team from 2017 that had, you know, Rakitic and Neymar and Suarez and Messi more in his prime and, you know, Gerard Piqué in his prime and all these, you know, in this, and, you know,
Piqué definitely not in his prime anymore, as we saw as he's tugging on Mbappe's shirt.
It's not the same team. So you have to, you know, take that into account. But over those 4 years, you know, PSG have gotten to a much different point than they were at. So I think I'm trying not to get all over the place, but it's a good example of where the two franchises are in this moment in time. But I did not think they were going to be able to do this and win 4-1. And mainly because I'd watched over the last 3 years how well PSG had been able to function offensively without Neymar on the field. And it had not ever really been good. I can't really remember a game where they were minus Neymar and then take out Di Maria as well, where they had neither of those players and were somehow even remotely competent offensively. And I was worried that going into a game like this, where the scoring chances are usually more precious, usually get less time on the ball, even against this Barcelona team, Barcelona still, you know, barely had the possession edge. I think it was something like 53-47. I was really not optimistic about PSG's ability to create a lot of scoring chances. And boy, was I wrong. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but just sort of staying in this. And we can talk about that, but staying in the sort of the big picture here, I think the story of this game was that PSG without Neymar, and again, without Angel Di Maria, were aggressive offensively. They had numerous chances. They probably could have scored 6 or 7 if the ball bounced differently, and just looked like the more complete team. They looked like the more competently coached team. They looked like the faster team. They looked like the stronger team. And in the end, they were clearly the better team. And I wasn't sure if they could unlock all of that without sort of their best player, and they did. And that is so symbolic of a lot, and we will get through it, don't worry. But just sort of in the big picture, you know, I'll get your thought on, you know, what, you know, how they were able to do this and what that means. And I think I'll let you kind of go into that of, you know, even without two of their, you know, probably top three playmakers, they handled Barcelona. This was not, you know, score two goals and hang on, you know, hang on for dear life for the whole second half. This was pretty much domination, you know, from start to finish. This was not, you know, PSG did not get lucky here. This was the better team doing what the better team should do.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Agree with a lot of that. And let me just say before I get started, anyone who's sitting there saying like, well, you know, I think I saw someone tweeted this, PSG do play better without Neymar and maybe they don't need Neymar. Like, just stop it. Like, this was a nice performance, but like Neymar infinitely makes your team better. Let's not even get into that conversation. Anyone who's thinking that has some other agenda with PSG and Neymar. So setting that to the side, I think what you saw is a real changing of the guard. We see these teams, you could throw Manchester United in there. You know, they had their heyday, and where are they now? They've not even approached what they used to be. Barcelona this summer will lose Messi. I'm confident. Whether he comes to PSG, he goes back to Argentina, MLS, wherever, they're going to lose Messi. And I'm not so sure. I don't think it's a given that you see maybe this year they qualify for the Champions League next season. But I think they are going to be like Manchester United. They're going to be searching for a manager, searching for a star. They have serious financial issues. So what this 4-1 win, obviously it sets up PSG really well, but I really think this is a changing of the guard. PSG is on the ascent. Barcelona is on the decline. They have so many issues at that club, and Messi is getting out of there and leaving them in just absolute shambles. And so I was like heading into this game, as I transitioned into the game itself and what it means, I was like, they need to be practicing wasting time. They need to maybe not park the bus, but play very conservatively. I did not think Pochettino would go there as attack-minded as he was, as free-flowing as it was. And this was the first time we really saw Pochettino's style at PSG. And it was a beautiful thing to watch. I know we were against a lot of aging stars at Barcelona, but, I mean, it wasn't even close. And that viral photo of Piqué holding onto the shirt of Mbappé is basically sums up the entire game. Barcelona were a step behind the entire time. At no point did I really think that they were going to really score and really threaten us. I mean, their biggest chance came from when Keylor Navas kicked the ball and it hit a Barcelona player and nearly went into the net. Like, I did not feel worried at all. And it was an impressive performance from Pochettino. But as we dive into the game a little bit more, let's dissect it. The big talking point in that first half for me.
Well, yeah, and we'll get, oh, go ahead. We'll get to that too.
Sure.
I think we're still in the big picture there, though.
Okay.
You saw, and I want to just touch on something you were talking about. The talent discrepancy here.
Oh, Lord.
And, and we talk about this, and I've heard this argument a lot, and this was sort of the crux of my whole point about Thomas Tuchel. And the argument that that the PSG fans have been having for the last 5 months, which is PSG a team that has a lot of talent that's being held back? Or is it a team that doesn't have as much talent that the coach is getting the most out of? And that was the discussion was, you know, is the talent at PSG at an elite enough level to compete in Europe, or is it not? And, you know, the manager deserves credit, more credit than I was giving them, or you were giving them, or we were giving them in general, for the performances PSG were able to put out there. And I think in this game, you sort of got the answer to that question. And I'm not saying that PSG have the most talent in Europe. They don't. Top to bottom, 1 through 18.
It's Bayern damn close.
Bayern have more. Arguably, Manchester City have more. I think Manchester City has more depth than PSG. But honestly, besides those two teams, PSG has as much talent as anyone else in any of the top European leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not, you know, this is not a team bereft of talent. This is not a team that is, you know, only 8-9 deep. This is a team that has 14-15 quality players.
Well, in Manchester United or City and Bayern Munich may have a better team overall, but no one has two of the top five players in their team.
No, and that's the trade-off.
Yeah.
The trade-off is PSG have game breakers while Bayern have, you know, 13-15 really excellent players. It's a different thing. They don't have the sort of Galacticos situation that PSG have. It's just a different way to set up a team. But you saw it in this game. PSG, you know, with who they were bringing off the bench, they were bringing on Julian Draxler, Ander Herrera, Danilo Pereira. These are not all world players, but they're professional football players.
Draxler's been on World Cup. I mean, he's an international.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Germany.
These are players that have been in World Cups, European Championships. These are professional football players. These are not bums. And you look at, you know, who Barcelona brought onto the field. You know, their best sub, I guess, of the whole game was Pjanic. And then a bunch of guys you'd never heard of.
It was like...
Literally, they brought on guys that you'd never heard of. Yeah, and then Martin Braithwaite.
Former Toulouse man.
You look at Barcelona's roster. They don't actually have a striker on the entire roster except for Martin Braithwaite. So you want to talk about the levels of talent and the way that PSG have been able to roster build over the last 3-4 years, you know, let's say ever since the 6-1, and you look at those starting lineups, and I looked at them this morning, PSG were inferior talent-wise pretty much across the board. I'm not sure there was a position that I would take a PSG player over a Barcelona player in that 6-1. I can't think of a guy I would take. Maybe Thiago Silva over Mascherano, their center back. Maybe. But that's not, you know, this is how different these two teams are compared to 4 years ago. PSG had the better starting lineup. They had the better superstars. They had the better bench. And Barcelona didn't have anybody they could bring off the bench that could really make a difference in that game, that could really change the way the game was going. And you saw it in the second half. They didn't get better, they got worse. And when they brought on their subs didn't make things better. They made things worse, if not the same. PSG brought on a player like Julian Draxler, who, again, has gotten a lot of flack over the years, but he's better than pretty much anyone else Barcelona could have brought on the field. He made more of a difference than any of those guys. So, you know, take that into account. How well this roster has been built over the last 4 years and how well it's been coached, you know, for the most part. And that the credit goes to a lot of people. It goes to Tuchel. It goes to Antero Henrique. It goes to Leonardo. And it goes now to Pochettino. Mm-hmm. This has been a process. And to be where PSG are now in this sort of bookend game, when you go back to March 8th, 2017, look at where that team was then, look where Barcelona was, and now look at where these two teams are now, it's a monumental achievement. It really is a monumental achievement what PSG have done to put themselves in this situation where they are now.
It does make you wonder with Draxler's contract situation. You know, his contract expires at the end of the season. He's a guy that, like, I'll play when you need me. I'm okay. I'm not gonna, you know, cause any waves. Like, that's the kind of player PSG needs. A guy who's like okay, sitting on the bench most of the time, but can come in and make a difference. And he's perfectly fine with that role. Sure, he's expensive, but we're PSG, so it's like we can afford it. So, I mean, do you extend his contract? Give him a couple more years, maybe like the Kurzawa deal. It's hard to find a player like that.
No, it's hard, but you can find players like that. That's a situation where you don't have to really overpay. But you know, if we're getting, you know, into the game,
I've been waiting to get into the game. I want to talk about this penalty. I know we don't agree on this.
No, I don't think we do.
All right, let's just set it up. So what was it, like the 27th minute, something like that? You had Kurzawa. Yeah. He was trailing. What's his name?
Frankie De Jong,
that's who it was.
Very even game up to this point.
Very even.
I would say very even. Both teams, you know, kind of feeling each other out. No, nobody was really head and shoulders over anyone else. It was just sort of it was a good start. It was the kind of start PSG needed. But yes. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so, and Kurzawa was doing exactly what he needs to. The ball is being played to De Jong. He's running into the box. Kurzawa's got his head turned back. He's looking at the ball. I don't even know if he knows where De Jong really is. And the camera angle is inconclusive. You look at it one way, it looks like De Jong tripped over his own feet and fell. You look at another angle, it looks like maybe his foot gets turned a little bit, maybe indicating that he did make contact with Kurzawa. But at the end of the day, it's like Kurzawa wasn't even looking. He wasn't trying to be malicious or anything like that. And for me, the camera angles are inconclusive. And I'm just like, how in the hell, when goals are at such a premium in the Champions League, that you award that a penalty? If that happened to us, I'd be like, yeah, we got away with one. But that was atrocious. And I guess maybe the official looked at it in the VAR booth, and it didn't go to an official review, but it was given a penalty. And Messi, to his credit, took a great penalty. But I thought it was fraudulent. I said it on Twitter. I just thought that was shocking, and I tweeted out again that it was a ref assisted goal for Barcelona, as they typically get every time against PSG. You can always put them up 1-0, because you know they're going to get at least one goal gifted to them, which I thought that was. And so, if you wouldn't mind sharing your thoughts on that, I know that you thought it was clearly a penalty, or at least according to the rules it was a penalty. So
I don't think I said clear. I don't think I said clearly a penalty. I think I said I agree with the way it was called on the field. So okay, here's what I'd say. When you have a call like that, which is borderline, it's a borderline call, because the way the rule is written, if you impede someone's forward attempt on goal, if you trip someone in the box, or if you impede their if you're one on one with them and you impede them going to the box. Trip them to the ground, even if you don't mean to do it, it's technically a penalty. But it's one of those calls where if the ref eats his whistle on that and doesn't call it at all, then goes to VAR, I don't think that call gets made on VAR.
Interesting.
I think this is one of those ruling on the field stands situations where you make the call on the field and it isn't obvious when you look at the replay one way or the other whether it's actually a foul. From one angle, it looks like he didn't touch him, and the angle they showed before the penalty kick, it very much looked like he wasn't touched. And even when I was watching it, I'm like, really, they're gonna give that? I mean, you look at the replay, I was upset about it, but then you look at the replay from behind, and it looks like when you blow it up, Kurzawa clips De Jong, and then De Jong's leg hits the back of his own leg and he falls down. And that, by definition, is a penalty.
And because I feel like intent has to play into this. Like, Kurzawa had no intent.
It's not in the box, it doesn't. It's the same thing with handball. If it's a handball clearly in the box, intent really doesn't have anything to do with it. It's the same basic idea. The problem is that's a call that you don't necessarily – it's borderline, as I said. So once the ref makes that call on the field, there really isn't a recourse to say, actually, it's not a penalty, unless it's absolutely obvious.
Right, which it wasn't.
So by the very sort of application of how VAR should be applied, which, and I'm very stingy about how I view VAR. I don't think that the officials should adjudicate the match via a television monitor. I think VAR should be used for when the ref clearly makes a mistake, a clear offsides, or an absolute stone cold penalty, or
Do we know where the referee was when this call was made?
Oh, he's right behind the play.
I mean, how much of the distance? Like, I want to make sure, that you can't even see it when you blow up the camera angle.
He's got a good angle at that call.
Okay.
He's got as good an angle, and then you have the side judge as well in that situation right down the line. So he had a view of that. So my guess is he saw that clip. But again, was it a big enough clip was it a big enough penalty that if it wasn't called, you could go to VAR and change it? This is the problem I had with the Kimpembe handball in the United game.
Yeah, very similar.
It wasn't called on the field. So to go to replay for a borderline handball, and it really, his arm was a little out of position, but it wasn't too far out. It didn't actually hit his physical hand. It hit him in the elbow. To go to VAR and to change the call when you didn't make the call clear on the field, to me, that would have been egregiously, that was egregiously bad when they did it to us. And I don't think that that's the right application of VAR. So for as ticky-tack as that call was, I can live with that. I absolutely can live with that call because it wasn't changed. It wasn't go to the replay and you know, change a borderline call. You don't want VAR to essentially assist the ref in his judgment. You want VAR there to Jay, to the ref. You clearly made a mistake here. It happens to everybody. We need to change the call out of the interest of fairness. That's what VAR should be used for. And I thought the Dutch referee in that situation used VAR the way it needed to be used. I didn't think that that was bad. It was unfortunate. Kurzawa was in decent enough position. I don't think that Frankie de Jong scores off of that, but it's just one of those things that happens. And I think the more important takeout from that is the way PSG responded.
Yeah, and you didn't expect, I mean, we've seen in the past something like that goes against PSG and you expect him to capitulate, but that wasn't the case. In fact, it was, what, 5-6 minutes later when Mbappe scored his first, which was a beautiful, it came from a beautiful pass from Marco Verratti outside of the boot, and then Mbappe had a brilliant touch in the box and then just fired on goal and tied the game up. It was timely. I mean, when that goal came, it was like, okay, we're going to be okay. We kind of got screwed a little bit on that penalty. It was soft, but okay, we're all back to level, and PSG got that away goal. So I feel like that was, of all Mbappe's hat trick and then Moise Keane, who also scored, of all the goals, I think that was the most important. You got the away goal. You leveled it back at 1-1. You immediately answered after Messi's penalty. That was a huge goal. What did you think? I mean, you talked about PSG's creativity. What did you think of that touch from Verratti and just Verratti's overall performance? I mean, for me, I thought he was the man of the match despite Mbappe's hat trick.
Yeah, that move was created, I think, by Marquinhos with a long pass to the wing to Kurzawa. And that's what I thought they needed to do early in the game. I think you don't want to get one-sided. You want to move the ball. And I think getting that ball out to Kurzawa, who had a really good game here. Kurzawa makes a nice little two-touch to Verratti. Verratti with the little flick. And then that's where the talent has to take over. And Kylian Mbappe in the box with the ball at his feet, with a chance to tie the game, that's clutch play. And when you're able to string together a movement like that to get your best player in the box with a chance to, you know, tie the game, you have to rely on your best players to make that happen. And they did. And you had your two best players, you know, probably on the field for you in Verratti and Mbappe, setting that tone and not allowing, you know, that game to get away from them. Because if you remember right after the Barcelona goal, Dembele had a nice little chance in front of goal that if he puts that away, it's 2-0 and the game is very, very different. Mm-hmm. If he comes, and it's always like that in football. There's these moments where the game sort of hangs in the balance and you can sort of go one way or the other. And PSG didn't panic. They didn't start turning the ball over. They didn't start running around like, you know, like headless chickens.
Icardi had a couple chances that he missed too. I mean, if Icardi takes some of those chances, this game is 6-1.
Yeah, they gathered themselves and they were able to do the things they needed to do and get the goal. And that was critical. That they needed to tie that game quickly. They did not want to get in a situation where they were chasing that game or chasing the goal. And I think they kept calm. And it was just sort of the beginning of a really good night at that point. You felt at that point like PSG could take control of the game. And I think for the most part, they started to at that point.
Absolutely. So let's get into the second half here. You know, I just want to say I was listening to ESPN FC. And this kind of ties into a little bit of what happened in the first half, but
you were why?
What's that?
I'm saying you were listening to them because usually they. Oh, yeah. Yeah, like why do that to yourself?
because it was such a great night for PSG. I just had to see what Craig Burley said, and of course, one of the first things he said was that in that first half that Idrissa Gueye should have been sent off with a second yellow, and it was, you know, very nice of the official to not do that and let him stay on. And Pochettino did take off Gueye early in the second half, but. I just thought that was funny. Do you think Idrissa Gueye should have been sent off? And any comments on the fact that that's what was brought up?
No, he shouldn't have been sent off, but he was close. He was playing on the edge. And that's, you know, kind of what he was asked to do. Like, his job was to break up counters. That was his job. His job was to be physical and to break up counterattacks. And he did his job. He was on the edge a little bit at times, and I think he needed to come off in that second half because you don't want somebody getting a second yellow there and going down to 10 men. You didn't need that to happen. So he did his job in the first half. I didn't think he played all that badly, but what he was asked to do was fairly risky, and you risk getting sent off in a situation like that. I think the ref understood that, you know, none of these were egregious fouls, and he gave him the yellow, and I think the yellow might have been a little egregious, but, you know, all of them were sort of fouls in the flow of the game. It wasn't like any sort of serious foul. Maybe if he kept doing it into the second half, you would have had to send him off for accumulation, but no one foul he committed was worth sending off.
And I mean, Barcelona committed, I would say, similar fouls, and they didn't get any cards. So I just wanted to bring that point up. And I had tweeted that Idrissa Gueye started out really good. I mean, he was breaking up those passes and playing on the edge. And I was like, I wonder if he can keep this up. Well, clearly he couldn't, just because he got himself into trouble. Pochettino made the change at halftime with Ander Herrera. I know a lot of people were wondering why Rafinha, but I thought Herrera...
No, Herrera was the right guy.
Yeah, I thought he was fine.
Because you don't want to, you're not changing the shape of the team. He wasn't trying to change the shape. He was just trying to get a guy to do what Idrissa Gueye was doing, but without, you know, having a yellow card over his head. That was the point. The point was to do the exact same thing you were going to do. Just get another guy, just throw another body out there that can do that kind of running. And Ander Herrera, you know, can certainly run. It's something he's very good at. He covers space really well. And I don't mean that as a passive aggressive dig, but you need midfielders like that that can cover ground. And PSG have a bunch of them that can do that now.
Yeah.
And I felt like at halftime, you know, I tweeted at halftime that, you know, if you're PSG, you had to be happy with that half. And I feel like in another incarnation of this team, maybe they would have sat back and been happy with that scoreline. I think in another time, I think in another place with other coaches, not just Thomas Tuchel, you know, Unai Emery or Laurent Blanc, I think they would have been happy with that score. And I think they would have tried to maintain that score. But instead of sort of being happy with where they were, I thought they got better in the second half. I thought they came out with intent, and that's sort of a difference in the philosophy of how PSG go about things. And I felt like too many times they've acted like a small club where you're just sort of happy to be there and, you know, keep going back to the 6-1, of course, because, you know, that's kind of partly the story here. You felt like PSG were in that game, they seeded the advantage to Barcelona from the very beginning. They were happy with trying to defend and trying to be passive. And you didn't feel like that in this game. You felt like PSG came out in the second half and they smelled blood and they didn't settle. They weren't happy with 1-1. They went there to win the game. And we'll talk about just sort of the brilliance in that second half. But the difference in mentality that has sort of, you know, the difference in the way this team views itself and the way these players react is really as much a story as anything else. And it manifested itself in that second half.
Yeah, I fully anticipated. I did my halftime thoughts on Periscope, and I thought that that Barcelona would come out and really try to press, and maybe PSG could hit them on the counter. But if they pressed, I mean, it was ever so slightly, and PSG were still able to take advantage. I never dreamed of three more additional goals. I thought, hey, we can get out of here 1-1, maybe 2-1, either for Barcelona or for PSG. I'd be more than happy with that. But they came out. Pochettino, you know, pulled all the right levers. He made all the right subs. I mean, you had Tilo Kehrer came on late, and we talked about Ander Herrera and then Draxler as well. I thought he came in and got an assist over to Mbappe for what was it, his fourth goal. So, like, or his third goal, fourth of the game, and it was all the substitutions worked out. It rarely happens, but they all came in and did a job, and it was just impressive. It was an impressive second-half performance that, you're right, I don't know if we would have anticipated this from a PSG of the past where they would go and just press at the Camp Nou and try to get more and more goals. You would think maybe they would sit back and just be happy with what they got, but they smell blood in the water.
Well, in that second goal, you know, there were times in that second half where Barcelona were trying to play like old-time Barcelona. And I think there were moments, you know, between the 55th and 60th minute where it looked like Barcelona, when it looked like PSG had those chances. There was that chance where Moise Keane, that great little back heel by Icardi that Keane almost got the deflected goal on, that Ter Stegen just got his hand on that one. And then there were a couple other chances there where it looked like, you know, PSG had sort of had their moment, and that, you know, now Barcelona was going to start to take the game over. But then, you know, PSG just repelled the attacks. Barcelona never really got great opportunities in the second half when it mattered. And you get to that second goal, and this is, I think, where Leandro Paredes really sort of comes into the picture. And, you know, what he is, and knowing now, after sort of him being around for 2.5 years and not really getting his chances under Thomas Tuchel, not really a Tuchel player, not really the profile that he likes, and sort of being a background guy, and, you know, having a great, you know, Champions League elimination round last year when Marco Verratti was hurt and they didn't have any other choice but to put him in. And you saw the glimpses of it in August, but now you see it. Like, this is a difference-making midfielder. Like, this isn't just a guy that you plug in there and he's a depth player. No, this is a guy that can start for you and not only be a starter, but be an absolute difference-maker in critical moments. And that pass he made to Florenzi from midfield to set up that second goal was just incredible. Whew. You know, that kind of ball where you just where you can't get that ball wrong. Because, you know, when most midfielders try to play a ball like that, it usually just goes out of bounds. It goes off the end line or it goes right to the goalie. But he curved it enough where the keeper couldn't come out for it, but it also gave Florenzi a time to run to it. And that's really the play of that sequence. That goal doesn't happen without that Paredes pass. And, you know, Mbappe being in the right spot at the right time, and it's those kind of goals where he's, you know, give Mbappe that chance. He's not going to miss that one.
He's not Cavani.
He's not going to miss that one. That's an easy goal for him off of a bad deflection from Piqué. But to just make one pass to get behind the defense, that is the kind of play that Neymar makes. That's a play that Messi makes. That's not a play that your average midfielder, your average player is going to make. Like, that's a special pass that he can make that, you know, it's one of his talents. And it's his greatest talent. And, you know, to do that in a match of that caliber is really special. And that was how at that point, I'm like, all right, 2-1. We got what we came for. you know, get out of here with a win or tied 2-2, and we're well, you know, we have well the advantage that we need.
Absolutely. And then you had Moise Kean, who all he does is, since coming from Everton on loan, is score goals. He gets on the score sheet after Icardi had, you know, struggled. You know, Kean doesn't need many chances, and he was able to finish. And at that point, it was like, holy crap, this could get ugly. I mean, at that point, it was 3-1.
And, well, again, yeah. the Paredes cross. Yeah.
And I wanted to touch on Paredes. You know, a lot of people maybe, oh, he's not that great. Maybe he's not the world-class midfielder we all want. But when he did arrive at that hefty price tag, was it $40 million? The one thing people said that he can do, and we've witnessed it over the years, is that long ball ability. He's able to play that pass. He may not be like a Messi in the intricate passes, the 1-2s, but he can pick out a pass. And I'll let you go, but I mean, we saw that on display against Barcelona.
Well, he won them the game. Like, you know, let's be clear, Paredes won them that match. The pass to Florenzi, and then that assist to Keane. Where, you know, granted, Barcelona screwed up the marking in that situation. But, again, he couldn't walk that ball over to him and hand it to him any better than he passed it.
Yeah.
That's like a 30, what was that, like a 25, 30-yard pass right on Moise Kean's head.
Yeah.
Just, like, that's absurd. And, like, you wonder to yourself, no Neymar, no Di Maria, who's going to be able to make those kinds of line-splitting, game-changing passes? And that was my concern going into the match. And it's like, oh, Leandro Paredes can do it. And he did it twice. And it's like, that's a team with good depth. That's a team that has quality all over the field.
And with Paredes, my favorite thing is that he's kind of like a shit starter. I love that. You know, he's kind of, we joke, he's Neymar's bodyguard. There was a clip, I don't know if you saw this on social media, he was getting into it with Messi. I mean, they're both on the national team in Argentina, but he is fiery, and I love that kind of player. I love that he will not back down, and he's got quality. I love it.
No, he's I think... He gives you that sort of spirit of Thiago Motta, but a little younger and a little better with the long passing. Like he's the guy that sort of, you know, we've been waiting for that Motta replacement, and I think people thought Paredes was going to be that, and then he wasn't quite that at the beginning, but now you feel like that guy's he's the heir apparent in that sort of role. And he brings that sort of toughness to the team, and he brings those guts and that aggression, and then he can just pick out a beautiful pass like that. And Moise Kean, my goodness, has he been everything you could have wanted and more?
No, like, no option to buy though. I don't know if we can keep him.
well, I'm not as worried about that. I think they'll figure out a way there because he's. Even if you got to pay, you know, are Everton going to turn down 40, 50 million euros for him? I don't think Moise Kean, if I'm Moise Kean, why would I want to go back to Everton? No, really. Like,
refuse to go back.
No, but he can do that. He can say, look, I don't want to play here anymore. Sell me somewhere. And what are Everton going to do? Keep him around? For what? To finish eighth in the Premier League? Like, that's a waste of Moise Kean's talent. Like, it's clear Moise Kean doesn't want to be there, and it's clear that, you know, if PSG, the thing I'd be worried about is a club like Juventus or a top-level club coming in and outbidding us for him. That's the only thing I'd be worried about. But that guy is, I mean, what a piece of business by Leonardo. I mean, really, what a piece of business. You upgrade that position, which had previously been, you know, Choupo-Moting. And you replace Cavani all in the same breath. And you have to, and this is the thing, you know, why didn't PSG keep Cavani? Well, because Moise Kean is giving you basically the same level of production, the same defensive intensity, the same kind of, you know, goal scoring for probably way less than half the price. Why pay Edinson Cavani 12 million euros a year when you're paying Moise Kean not even close to that.
A fraction of that. And sorry, Cavani Lover. See, Keane is better. He's just a better player right now.
Well, he's better for what they need him to do. When you have Neymar and Mbappe and Mauro Icardi, and you can play Moise Keane as a striker and as a winger, which is the revelation here, which is that he played really well as a winger off the striker in this match. And he had numerous chances where he could have scored. And to get that goal, you know, that goal only reflects how well he played. And at that point, you're thinking, okay, 3-1, now I'm happy. You know, let's you know, take it easy from here. And they didn't. I thought, you know, PSG were smart about it. They didn't park the bus. They, you know, Barcelona got more of the possession, but that's sort of natural when you're chasing the game. And PSG weren't sort of pinned in their own end. They weren't playing frantic passes out of the back. They were comfortable, I thought. And they were comfortable all the way to the, you know, 85th minute. And I guess we could talk about the fourth goal that sort of put the cherry on top of all of this.
Yeah, so, and at that point, you're up 3-1. Keane scored. The only question now is Mbappe going to get his hat trick? Is he going to, I mean, because two goals is nice, but you get a hat trick against Messi, against Barcelona at the Camp Nou, that puts you in a rarefied air. That's not something that is able to be done all too often. And Mbappe was able to get that hat trick late in the game. It was probably his most eye-pleasing goal. It came off of Draxler's assist. Draxler drove down the middle of the pitch and picked out, waited long enough, attracted the defender, and then just played a simple pass over to a wide open Mbappe. And from the edge of the box, I believe it was, just curled in a shot into the upper 90. I mean, as beautiful of a goal as you'll see. And he made it look extremely easy. And at 4-1, I mean, I was dancing. I mean, it was just a beautiful night, and to cap it off with a goal like that, with a hat trick for Mbappe, all of the memes now are going Barcelona's way. Everyone is laughing at them, and it makes you feel good after so many years of having to take their crap to turn this around. It's not 6-1, but we'll take 4-1, right?
Yeah, excellent. That was excellent from Julian Draxler, and the instinct on a play like that, when you get the ball and you're going 3-on-2, is to just pass it to Mbappe immediately. That's the instinct, because you want to get that guy running at the defense. But what Julian Draxler did, which is what he's done a lot over his career that's been underrated, is that he finds space and runs into space as well as any player PSG have. And wherever he goes in 2021, they're getting a good player. Like, they're getting a really good player that has, you know, years of good experience, you know, and he's still a fairly young guy. So whoever's getting Draxler, if he goes to the right situation, is getting a real sort of difference maker kind of player. Like, if he went to a Bayer Leverkusen or somewhere in Germany where he could be like the main feature player, I think he'd do well in that situation. And to just, again, run at the defense. He just kept going at them, kept closing the space, and he forced De Jong off of Mbappe, because if De Jong doesn't come over and cover there, Draxler is one-on-one on goal, and Draxler could fit it in. And maybe that's what you want to try to force Draxler to do, but De Jong makes the play that, you know, you're taught to make there. You close the space. Like, he didn't do anything wrong in that situation, and Draxler just plays this perfect little side pass. He doesn't lead Mbappe, which is what he could have done. He just sort of slots it slightly behind him so that all Mbappe has to do is open up his body and just aim for that corner. And Kylian didn't miss. And the way he was playing in that game, and we haven't really talked about him, you know, sort of saving the best for last year.
Yeah.
But the way he was playing, that ball was going in. You knew once that pass was made, you knew Mbappe was finishing that. It was fait accompli.
it's kind of like Steph Curry, wide open three-pointer. Like, you know it's going in after he's already hit like 7 or 8 of them. You know at the end of the game, he's just not going to miss. And so that's kind of like, and it was 3-point distance for Mbappe. I mean, it, just a beautiful goal, you know, hanging in the Louvre. I mean, it was just a thing of beauty. And I mean, what can you say about Mbappe at this point? You know, the stage was set for him. No Neymar up against Messi at Barcelona. If he would have not showed up, you know, I basically had said, if he doesn't show up tonight, like, I don't know if I'm that upset if we don't sign him to an extension. Like, what do we have him for if not for this very reason, is to show up on a night like this? And boy, did he show up. I hope we can sign him to an extension now, because this is what he is capable of. And I know there's going to be a lot of suitors out there. And I saw, who was it? Grant Wall late last night. It was basically talking about that, you know, who cares that he's playing against like Nantes and Dijon, and you know, he's got to go to a better league. He can't
who cares if he's playing against Alaves?
Exactly.
It's still the dumbest of dumb arguments.
But people don't understand that he is from Paris. It means something to him to carve out his legacy in the city where he's from, in a city where it hasn't been done before. He could go to Real Madrid tomorrow and win, and it's the same thing Cristiano Ronaldo did. You know, he could go to another big club, and it's already been done, and he's not going to stand out. If he wins the Ballon d'Or and the Champions League in Paris, legend forever. He did it at a place where it's not typically done, ever. And so it means something to him. It's his hometown. It means something to him. It may not mean anything to some of the other young Parisians who have been in the club and then left for more playing time or whatever, but Mbappe, he said it, the badge is special to him. And yeah. So stop talking about playing Dijon, and it means something to him. Leave the kid alone. He's going to go where he wants, but he wants to be in Paris. Get over it.
Well, yeah, for now. And that's all that matters for now. We're taking this one day at a time here, 1 year at a time. But it's like, look, he had to have a game like that for PSG to do what they did. You know, he had to have that kind of game. And he did. And he was the protagonist. And he was the best player on the field. And he was making guys look silly. And he was, you know, and he was playing directly. And he was using his skills. And that felt like, you know, there had been games where Kylian Mbappe had been great. There was a game, I think, where he scored like 4 goals in 20 minutes. So, you know, there's been times where he's been this good. But this felt like his first sort of, again, I won't say a coming out game, because he's had, you know, he scored 2 goals against Argentina in the World Cup.
But in the Champions League, like, he's really only done it for Monaco.
But that's what this has felt like to me. Like, this is what that game felt like. It felt like what he did against Argentina in the World Cup, where you're like, oh, that's what he can do. Oh, that's how good he can be. You see the greatness, but you don't always see it like that all the time. And now it's like, okay, yeah, he can do that, and he's going to do that, you know, many more times in the future for whoever he plays for. And you know, to come in and to have that pressure and to know that this was his night, and to do that on a, you know, do that on a night where everyone was sort of focused on him.
Yeah, everyone.
That was special. That was a special performance.
What do you make of the fact that under Tuchel, we didn't see that out of Mbappe, at least in the last year? We didn't see that at all. Like, he went a year without scoring the Champions League. Pochettino comes in, first Champions League game, hat trick. Coincidence?
Yeah, well, not as much of a coincidence as you may want to think, because you don't want to leave it all at the feet of the coach. But here's sort of the thing with that. Part of the reason that Thomas Tuchel is no longer PSG coach is because of what you said. Because you have a player like Kylian Mbappe, and you can't unlock him in your offense. Like, that's a problem. And part of it is that Kylian needs to be involved. Like, they need to figure out a way for for Neymar and Mbappe to sort of get the best out of each other. And I think for the most part they do, but Tuchel's offense was very Neymar centric. And I think with Pochettino, I don't necessarily see it that way. I think it's going to be a little more even because those two can trade off in a way, and they can, you can have two superstars on the same team. It's not an issue if those guys are willing to do that, and they are. I don't think there's an issue with that. It's just your, are you attacking enough? Is your offense dynamic enough where you can sort of afford to have two guys trading off with each other, as opposed to Tuchel's offense, which was more stagnant. It was more Neymar-centric, and it was more slow and deliberate and less counterattacking, less space, more intricate passing. I think the style of Pochettino fits Mbappe better. And quite frankly, Neymar can play in any style. So it's not like it's going to hurt Neymar any bit. But yeah, like, I think there's something to that. I don't think it's the only thing, but I do think there's something to that.
Absolutely. We're coming up on an hour here, so I do want to throw this out there. I think that the fact that PSG are not leading Ligue 1, and it's very competitive. I joke that I don't think Barcelona would finish any higher than fourth right now in the French League, and people are like, that was disrespectful of Monaco. And after what we saw against Barcelona, I'm not so sure they would maybe be that high in the French League. But I mean, how much do you factor in the competitiveness of the league and the fact that they won't be able to take a night off and they are getting challenged? I mean, Monaco this Saturday or Sunday this weekend is going to be a difficult game. That's going to keep them sharp heading into the return leg in early March. How much do you consider the domestic league factoring in how far PSG can go this far in the Champions League?
I don't think the league is that big of a factor in that regard, because last year they went, you know, 4 months without playing in the league and got to the Champions League final.
That's a good point.
I think what it says more is that PSG had some bad losses at the beginning of the year, and it's put them in a situation where they're, you know, going toe-to-toe with teams that are better than they were. Lyon's better than they were last year. Lille's better than they were last year. Monaco's better than they were last year. And they're in a competitive league. Like Juventus is something like fourth in their league, and they're currently losing 1-0 to Porto while we're recording this. Like Atletico Madrid's leading La Liga. Barcelona's fourth in their own league. Like, it's not stunning to not be in first, and it's good to see Ligue 1 be competitive. And they're going to have a big game on Sunday night against Monaco, where PSG are going to have to show up. They're going to have to play their players. They can't just sit guys. Like, they're going to have to go and try to win that game, because it's critical to winning Ligue 1, which is a goal of theirs, and it should be.
And what it does, winning 4-1, not only is that great, not only does that set you up to advance to the next round, but it also gives you plenty of time with Neymar. I think that Neymar should be on the bench for the return leg, and you just sit him there. And if you absolutely need him, you bring him out. But, like, you can give him plenty of time to rest, and that is crucial.
You can't be arrogant about it. I think he should play no matter what. I think he should get minutes no matter what.
And if he's 100%, I wouldn't put him out there if he's 80%. And, you know, he tweaks a groin or something. And only if he's 100%, fully cleared. He wanted to play against Khan, and that's what happened. He went down.
Yeah, but he's not a, you can't treat him like a porcelain doll.
But he's got to be 100%. If he's, like they said, 4 weeks, that would put it you right ahead of that return leg. And, that was an initial diagnosis. Maybe he needs an extra week. That's what I'm saying. But if he's fine, he's 100%, play him. But if not, even 95%, you don't need him. Keep him on the bench.
Yeah, but he has to be available, because you can't take for granted that Barcelona are just going to lay down here.
And no.
There's a lot of difference between what happened 4 years ago and what's happening now. There's a lot of differences. And we've pointed out what the differences are. But
bring him out in the 90th minute just to troll him.
If Lionel Messi decides that he does not want his last Barcelona Champions League match to be him just wandering in space, and he really focuses and he pulls out, you know, the Messi that, you know, he was before, and just has a, it just does a madness on PSG. You know, the door is open for that. That's not out of, you know, it's that situation in Avengers Infinity War, where Doctor Strange is looking at the, you know, million possible scenarios where, you know, they fight Thanos, and in like a million and a half of them, they lose. But in the one, you know, the 1,501 scenario, they find a way to, you know, beat him. And in this case, what that is Lionel Messi just absolutely going crazy. And they get a goal early, and the momentum builds. And just like what happened the last time, it's a scenario. It's not likely, not even remotely likely. But again, there's that one chance in a million where something happens. And you can't, if you're PSG, treat this like a foregone conclusion. Because if you do, then that one chance in a million all of a sudden becomes a little bit more possible. And I don't think they will. So let me be clear about that. I don't think they will. I think they're going to go into this game. There's too much history. They've had too much experience. They've done too many good things recently. I don't see them taking this lightly. I don't see them resting players. They're going to play their best team. They're going to play Neymar if he's healthy. And they're going to play it like it's nil-nil, and they're going to try to win the game, which is what they need to do.
Yeah.
Because if they try to win the game, if they tie the game, they advance. You know, they're not going to, I think, you know, have the same thing happen. I think it's a different time. And I don't even think Barcelona thinks they can do it. I don't even think there's, you know, I don't think they can even rally enough fake enthusiasm or fake slogans to get them through this one.
I will be tuning into the Barcelona live stream, though, to see those super fans. I will be tuning in for that.
There's always that one in a million. And PSG just have to understand there's always that one in a million. And you have to be, again, this is the Champions League. Weird things happen in the Champions League. We know this.
Yes.
It's that kind of tournament. And if you're PSG, you just have to be aware of that. And you can't play this tie like you're up, you know, three goals. Can't do it.
No.
You have to play it like it's nil-nil. You have to take your chances. You got to score two or three goals on the other end. And then there's nothing to worry about. Well, do what you need to do. Yeah. And, you know, score a goal or two in the first half and put the thing away. That's what you should be trying to do. Not what they did last, you know, the invention of the Thiago Silva backpedal, where it's, you know, where Unai Emery wanted them to play more aggressively, but Thiago Silva just said, screw it, let's park the bus for 90 minutes. You know, that can't happen, and I don't think it will. I think they've done too much. They've been through too much. There's too much experience on the team. They have too many good players. They'll have Di Maria back. They'll probably have Neymar in some form or fashion. And yeah, again, one in a million.
We're also going to have, Variety and Paredes. Neither one of them got a yellow, so they'll be there.
Yeah. Again, be aware of the, you know, be aware of the there's a possibility. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. You know, Pochettino's a good coach. They're going to be prepared. So I'm not really worried about it. I'm just saying don't, you know, it's two legs for a reason, and you just have to be aware that it's a possibility.
I just want to win 6-1 on aggregate, just so when everyone says like, oh, 6-1, I was like, oh, you mean the aggregate score that PSG beat Barcelona by? Like, that would be poetic.
Well, it would be nice, but, you know, yeah, I'm not, if I'm Barcelona right now, I'm not thinking, you know, I'm not thinking come back here.
No.
There's not enough. They don't have enough. They don't have enough on the bench. They don't have enough at the starting lineup.
They got nothing.
They don't have, yeah, but again, you just have to be aware of it. It's just something keep in mind.
Well, we'll preview.
Weird things can happen.
We'll get that preview ahead of the return leg. We got some time. I did want to say that weirdo Erling Haaland scored for Dortmund, and they're up 2-1, which is great. I'm all for Haaland scoring goals right now because I know his buyout at Dortmund is considerably cheaper than what it would take to get Mbappe on your team. So maybe, hey, Real Madrid, go ahead and get get that player, and you know, you can't afford Mbappe right now. So that
is Dortmund at home in the first leg, or
no? They're away, so it's 2-1 and against Sevilla, so they're looking good.
Yeah.
So hey, maybe we'll get a rematch. That'd be nice against against Dortmund, but we'll see. Mark, yeah. I feel like we've said a lot about this game, but visit PSGtalk.com. We've got more. We're also recording a PSG Talking podcast at some point today. We're going to have like a mega crew on that one. Everyone wants to get in to talk about the win over Barcelona. But Mark, how can people find you on social media?
Well, if they would like to say how wrong I am, and I'm up for that as long as you're respectful, I'm Mark Damon 9, at Mark Damon 9.
Absolutely. And I am at PSG Talk. Be disrespectful if you want. I know against Barcelona, I was definitely disrespectful to their club and everything else. So bring the heat is all I'm going to say. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram. We're on YouTube, podcast. I'm pretty sure if you just search PSG, you'll find us. Subscribe, leave a comment, review us, all that good stuff. And we'll try to do this again soon. We'll talk league on. We'll talk about the return leg against Barcelona. Thank you, as always, for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Au revoir for now.